You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Foz Mamoon, and Seth Miller.
Coming to you from Singapore, and the room that I'm in at the Wanderlust Hotel.
In Little Italy.
In Little Italy?
Little India, my bad.
Little India.
I'm a little sleep deprived.
you more than me. So Foz and I are in Singapore. We wanted to fly the LA, Singapore, and then Singapore, San Francisco route. And so we did that, and we are here at the Wanderlust.
Like all good things. Like all things. It sounded like a good idea at the time.
Yeah, and in hindsight, it was a terrible idea. but this hotel, first of all, is probably the strangest hotel I've ever stayed in.
You know, I've learned two things on this trip. One is, this is definitely a very strange hotel. The second is, I can't let you make hotel choices.
Well, I chose this place because it's in Little India, and it's close to a bunch of subway stops and MRT stops.
Right, so you've got the rave going on here. Meanwhile, I've got the Yellow Submarine.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we should explain what the rave is. I think, so my room, I walk in, and it's just like a rotating light that shines off the ceiling. And they're definitely like bright red, green, pink, purple, and it's just constant. I can turn it off, but when I first walked into this room, I was very confused.
It's like a rave.
Yeah. And your room is...
Everything's yellow.
Everything is bright yellow tile. The bed is on a raised platform next to the shower.
Yes.
Immediately next to the shower. Like you roll out of bed and you're in the shower.
Yes. Which, by the way, as I'm learning, that platform is dangerous at night.
I think all these rooms are dangerous tonight. My room doesn't have any light, like any kind of lighting, except these, like, this is all the lighting in the room.
That's not true. You've got this lovely light from the elevator shaft.
Yeah, yeah. I can, and so I hear the elevator. It was just a bad choice. This is a quirky hotel. It makes W seem tame.
Yes. Yes. I mean, I have to give them credit. They did a nice job. Every floor has a different theme. Like, it's a good idea. It's poor execution.
Yeah. And your room's noisy because you face the street. I face a corridor.
Yes. That is the drawback. Like, while I got upgraded, and the upgrade, apparently all that means is I get a bathtub, not just a shower.
And the bathtub's just, like, out in the open in the room.
Yes. You know, but they did give me a gas chamber.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything's, like, super enclosed. I mean, it's soundproof, too.
Yeah, yes.
So, you know, the bathroom is like its own little cube, its own little glass cube, which is dangerous at night because there's no light in the room. Like, you have to turn on all the lights to see anything in the middle of the night. So, it's great for sleeping, which is I've learned, but not good for using the restroom in the middle of the night.
No.
But, so we're here, we flew LA, Singapore, and I think we can both agree we'll never fly that flight again.
You know, I said that the last time I flew that, and here I am.
It was long.
It was beyond long. And it didn't help that we had an awful crew.
Had a bad crew, bad experience just on board in general, I think.
Bad passengers.
Yeah. So the crew, I think we should talk about that first. They just seemed really nonchalant about everything. At first, it seemed like it was going to be a great crew. They came by, we got pajamas, we got champagne. I mean, they were just like on the ball.
Yep.
And then the flight started, and dinner service for you was quick because you had the executive meal. Or whatever, like, what do they call it now?
It's express.
The express meal. And I had the full service, and you were done and ready to go to bed probably almost in, I don't know, 45 minutes to an hour before me. And I just skipped dessert and cheese and everything else and tried to sleep.
That's real. I was ready to go to bed even before I got on that plane.
Yes. and it was... I don't know. They just between that and like getting service with water and just a drink in general was tough.
Yeah, it was amazing. Like our empty water bottle sat there for I would say hours.
Yeah.
And then when we asked for water, it was like the guy was put out.
Yeah.
And then when you asked for a customs form, you got a club soda.
I did. That was great.
Because that's what you asked for.
Yeah. And no customs form. No. So, and then, you know, it's just, I mean, it's an 18-hour flight. It turned out to be right at 18 hours by the time we landed and taxied across the airport.
Yeah, they said flight time was 17:05, but it actually really was more like 17:25.
Yeah.
And we took, I mean, there was a law. We just went straight.
Yeah, it was straight out of LAX. We didn't make any turns, really. It didn't follow the Great Circle. And I was looking at the route of today's flight coming here, and LA Singapore went north. I mean, it crossed over the Aleutian Islands. So winds must be definitely pushing the flights different directions and stuff. But, I mean, I slept for a solid 8 hours or so. You probably slept for about the same, maybe longer than me.
The first time I probably slept for 9-10 hours, and the second time I probably slept for 2 hours.
Yeah, and my quality of sleep because of the passengers was not great. I think you probably slept better than me.
Yeah, but just, there were some annoying passengers. The kids were yelling. No one. I mean, we had, what, 6 kids in the minicab?
Yeah. We were in the back cabin of the 789.
6 kids, all, some more, some better behaved than others. A baby, which apparently had an entourage that traveled with it.
Yeah, I think the kids were, you know, I'm okay with kids being noisy. It happens. I think what irritated me more was the adults, because the adults treated it like their own personal private jet, and it was distracting. And the crew wasn't much better. I mean, they were loud. There was one point in the flight when I could hear them clearly talking, and I'm wearing earplugs. And it's like they're talking at full volume, like they're wearing earplugs.
Oh, yeah, they're like talking to passengers, like when all the lights are out, you know, someone asks for food and they're like yelling across the cabin. Do you want it? It was ridiculous.
Yeah, it was just, and so it made it feel even longer than it was, because it was already a long flight. And by the time, I mean, when they opened the door, you were like a rocket off that plane.
I needed to get off.
You were just like, I got to get out of here.
I couldn't deal with the people because I was probably just going to crack at some point.
Yep. And so, but it's super interesting to me just how long that is. And then going back, we leave tomorrow morning. Going back, the flight time's like 13 hours.
13 and a half, 4 hours shorter.
Which is crazy.
Well, what's crazy to me is that flight was full.
Yeah. I mean, it's packed.
I'm amazed that the 789 has that kind of range.
Yeah. It is incredible.
Because by the end of it, we actually flew 10,000 miles.
Yeah, we were trying to get a screenshot of that, and it had already cleared off. But, yeah, I mean, because when we were about an hour out, we still had nearly 500 miles to go. And we were at 9,500.
Yeah, we were a little past 9,500, like 9,582 or something.
Yeah. And that is incredible, right, to do that. And with a full cabin. It was rough. And I mean, there was parts of the flight too, talking about bad crew and bad passengers. There were people from coach coming up and hanging out in the business class cabin at one point.
That's not, they weren't hanging out. They were sharing seats. It was a seat share.
Yeah. I didn't know you could do this anymore. I mean, we saw them when we were boarding the plane, these people, and they, and then halfway through the flight or even later in the flight, they were just like hanging out in business class. It was bizarre.
Yeah. The crew did nothing.
Yeah. So anyway, we'll see how the return flight is.
Shorter.
I think you're very happy about that. I think I'm going to sleep the whole way.
As am I. I'm hoping that we get a lot of wind so we get home sooner.
That'd be nice.
Yeah.
What do you think about Singapore?
Balmy.
But it is toasty.
You know, I was thinking about this. You've been complaining about the heat. You grew up in Houston.
I know. I think I've been acclimated to the Pacific Northwest too much.
I'm like, it occurred to me a little while ago, I'm like, why is he complaining? He's used to this.
It does. It feels a lot like Houston. It's just like slap you in the face, hot.
Yeah.
The last time I was here was 7 years ago, I think is what we were talking about.
Yeah.
And I don't think it was this humid. Today was just really humid. And that's because it rained overnight. And so that...
Oh, my God. It was poured overnight. It just didn't stop.
And so then when the sun comes up, it just gets into the atmosphere and you're feeling it then. But other than that balminess, have you had fun? I think you found a new love. It's called lime juice.
Yes.
And we're like 2 blocks from the lime juice place. We've been there 3 times today.
That was a bad idea. But it's good.
It is very good.
It's refreshing, especially in that heat.
I think, it makes it a little bit easier to walk around, for sure. And staying in Little India, we've had some good meals. We had a really nice biryanis. We had, what did we have yesterday?
The kebabs.
That was really good. And then tonight we're going to go to the Lao Pa Sat night market and get some satay.
And on our arrival, we went to the employee...
The employee canteen. We went to the employee canteen at Changi. Did they say Changi or Changi? What do you think it is?
Changi?
Changi? I think that's how... Yeah, I heard it pronounced. So there's 2 employee canteens. One's on... The one in T2, which is the one we went to, is at the top of a parking garage. And then there's another one in T1 that is in the basement of a parking garage, basically the basement of the terminal. And it was great. I mean, I got a plate of chicken rice and some some black vinegar bok choy for $3, $4. And you got fried noodles with seafood for
Four or $5.
And it was great. It was awesome. Yeah.
It was a good way to get started.
Yeah, it was a good, like, wake me up. I mean, it's interesting to see us. We're eating breakfast, and it's fried noodles and, you know, chicken rice. And we had a conversation about what constitutes breakfast.
No judgment.
Yeah, just eat what you like.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've just had some really good meals. So I'm excited about tonight. I love going to the Sate night market. And we actually met up with a listener.
We did.
Here in Singapore. He took us to a ramen shop.
Yes.
And
it was a good time.
Yeah, good conversation. Interesting. His name is Jonathan. He took us to a ramen shop. I had just had some interesting conversation with someone who lives here. And just
an expat of sorts.
An expat of sorts. And just travels around the region. Gave some great China tips. So, yeah. Because we were telling him we were going to Chengdu. Or we want to go to Chengdu.
At some point.
Yeah. What else do you want to talk about?
Well, let's see. They upheld the tariffs on the C-Series.
Yeah, they did. And Boeing responded by
saying, well, we're starting a discussion with Embraer.
And the stock price of Embraer just skyrocketed, right, for a few days?
Yeah. But then the Brazilian government got caught off guard, so because they have to bless it, and who knows what's actually going to happen.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting times.
Yeah.
If they buy Embraer, I mean, that's a good I don't see it being great for customers, really. We'll be down to two aircraft providers.
That's not true. We've got Mitsubishi, we've got Sukhoi.
Yeah, because people are buying those planes like they're going out of style.
Yeah, but, I mean, excuse me, we've got Airbus basically taking over the C-Series, and we don't know what's going to happen with the CRJ series after that.
That's true.
Right. Yeah. So you're already seeing consolidation.
Yep. That's true. Very true. What else? Did we talk about the Atlanta power outage? Oh, we did. We did with Seth, yeah.
But we didn't talk about that, you know, they now need to pay Delta.
Yeah, the city of Atlanta. Delta wants to
pay. Or Georgia Power.
Or Georgia Power. Whoever. Whichever comes first. Delta wants them to be reimbursed. They want to be reimbursed for the outage. Something like $1 billion?
No, it's like 25 or 50 million.
Oh. Oh, yeah. Just
now, do you think they can get either the city or Georgia Power could give them vouchers in kind like they do to passengers?
Yeah, just use one of these for a meal on your next Georgia Power outage.
Here's a $25 million voucher, no residual value.
No residual value, cannot be resold. Expires after 1 month.
No bartering.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, man. What else has been going on? We were talking about some stuff. We went to a model shop today. That was kind of cool.
It was. I've never been to one of the ones in Hong Kong, so I can't say.
Yeah, this one was a little bit smaller, for sure. And it was more set, like, general models. And then they had some airplane models.
Yeah. They had a pretty extensive.
So we both got Eastern LT-11s, right?
Yes.
It's kind of exciting. It's
novelty.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a novelty. But what else? I know you had mentioned something else you wanted to talk about. Now I can't remember.
We're talking about mistake fares.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about mistake fares. So Air France, KLM, your fare is now canceled. It's dead. It's gone.
Yeah, so earlier this week, Air France had a great mistake fare, which was L.A. or San Francisco to Heathrow via Charles de Gaulle in Primera, which is their premier, which is their first-class product. And the one-way fare was about $636. Round trip was around $1,500 when you factor APD. And so coincidentally, it was alive for quite a bit of time. Normally, these things come and go really quickly. This was alive for a couple of hours. And within the day, Air France went back and canceled everything.
Yeah.
But they didn't notify anyone.
No email.
No email, nothing. The only way you would find out is if you went to the reservation, tried to pull it, said there'd be no segments. Or your reservation file is empty or something vague like that. So I decided to play my odds and from the V Australia debacle with the Auckland fare, I booked one on Air France and one on Delta to see what happens. And so Air France canceled pretty instantly. They finally, we were flying on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
So sometime Wednesday night, Thursday morning. Now keep in mind, I bought the ticket with Air France. KLM calls me.
Mm, that makes sense.
Which is really confusing. I'm like, why is KLM calling me? I'm like, oh, wait, they're the same company.
Yeah.
But they left me a minute-long blank voice message.
Nice.
That was useful.
That's always fun to check overseas.
Yeah. But incidentally, by the time we got to Singapore on Friday, by that point, Delta had also gone back and canceled the ticket. But Delta didn't do it instantly. They waited a few days. So I suspect what happened is they got bullied by Air France to do it.
Yeah. Because
historically, with the last one, Delta honored the Auckland tickets, even though V-Australia canceled all the V-Australia issued ones.
Gotcha. So you were kind of expecting Delta to maybe honor this one.
I thought maybe, but, you know, it's funny. It got me to thinking. Remember the old days when mistake fares would just get honored?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I started wondering why. What's the difference now? And the reality is, in the old days, and the old days being as little as 4 or 5 years ago, right?
Yeah.
We're not talking years, decades. The number of people buying them was much smaller.
Yeah. They weren't very published.
It was a couple hundred. They would get posted on Flyer Talk. A couple hundred tickets would get sold, and that's it. The problem is that, like, now we've got all these mainstream deal sites. We've got the bloggers, which are trying to capitalize on this. And the fact that there's so much publicity, they're selling thousands of these, and the liability goes up that much more.
Yeah, and I think you notice this from, like, how long it takes for fares to get killed,
yeah,
right? I think that's the main thing. I mean, not even the cancellations. I'd say how long the deals are out there. I mean, there's been mistake fares out there for months. It's back years ago, but as soon as they get published, that fare usually dies, because when all the people start booking it, the flags go off at the carriers, and they see something weird happening, and they kill the fare. But it used to be, if not a lot of people bought it, the fare would be out there for months and months and months, in some cases years. Okay. And it would be, I mean, there are a few out there that I remember that were out there for like 2 years before anyone noticed anything, and they were definitely mistakes.
The one that comes to mind right now is Lisbon St. Martin.
Yeah.
It was like $1,000 in Swiss first. It was a UA published fare. And it died with Apollo. Like, that fare was published for years and it was in Apollo. And when Apollo finally got migrated away, that's when the fare died.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost like the London Heathrow, what was it? Down to Sydney. The London Heathrow Sydney fare. Yeah. Which was a great first class fare.
Yeah.
So. I wonder, like, with that happening, you know, a lot of the mistake fare stuff, if airlines would just honor it, because if they only sold 100 of them, the revenue loss wasn't probably even noticeable.
No.
Because they weren't filling a whole first class cabin or business class cabin with all mistake fares. And I'm guessing with the widespread publishing, there's potential for, you know, half the business class cabin in some cases to be sold out.
Oh my God. Like when Delta had those, a couple of years ago with the mistake fares, the $62, $26 cross-country round trips, like, you'd get on these flights and it was entire families.
Yeah.
Just camping out.
Yeah. And they would go to JFK for the weekend or whatever, see family, and then fly back.
Or LA.
Yeah. Yeah, it's. I definitely think it's had an impact. I mean, I think blaming the bloggers, though,
they're part of the problem. I don't think they're the sole problem.
Yeah. And part of it's also the changing rules, right? I mean, the DOT has kind of loosened up on mistakes, allowing airlines to cancel fares.
You could say that, but there's been a ton of mistake fares since those rules changed, and they're still being honored.
Yeah.
Like the Sydney one, the Vancouver-Sydney on ANA earlier this year, that got honored.
Yeah.
But it wasn't alive for very long.
Yeah.
And they didn't sell thousands of tickets, and it wasn't published.
Yeah.
Nearly as much as some, like this one this week.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a very good point. And, you know, I don't know what to tell people, but I think, you know, a lot of people grab these fares. I mean, everyone's monitoring the deal site. Everyone wants to go somewhere in business. Everyone wants – and I think, really, find the decent fare in business. The, you know, like this fare was actually a really good fare to come here in business.
There's a lot of good business class fares out there right now. You just have to know where to look.
And they're not mistakes.
No.
So the airline's going to honor them. They're sales or they're whatever. And
but that brings up an interesting thing, right? So how do you know when something – at this point with the DOT rules, it's very easy for an airline to claim something's a mistake even though it wasn't or because
– True.
Right? They decided to change their mind. I mean, earlier this year, I mean, at the beginning of the year, we saw Qatar fares from like the West Coast to Singapore and stuff for $1,600 round trip.
Yeah.
Right? That clearly wasn't a mistake, but if someone
some people could interpret it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how do you know what's a mistake and what's not?
Yeah. It's a good point. It's a very good point. It's hard to know. I mean, these tickets were sub $2,000.
Yeah. They're just under $2,000, and I don't think they were a mistake.
Yeah. Paid business class. You know, it's interesting. And I wonder, like, we've seen even fare sales in first. Recently, there's been some really good, you know, sub-$4,000, sub-$3,000 first-class fares, long distance, really long distance fares. And, I mean, that seems like a mistake, but it's just a sale.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's at the end of the day, the inventory spoils when the door closes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? And airlines are definitely trying to command a premium, right, from all those last-minute travelers. But at the end of the day, a lot of these premium cabins are flying empty.
Yeah. especially an F or in some cases ultra long haul business is flying empty.
I mean, right now, I think half of our business cabin tomorrow is going to be non-res.
Yeah, likely.
But they haven't opened up a ward space or upgrade space. So how does that make fiscal sense?
Yeah, yep. Letting the employees fly for free, which is great. It's a perk of being an employee, but you have to look at the revenue side of that.
Yeah, well, when you're so focused that you're not even clearing upgrades of revenue passengers.
Yeah.
Right, but you're going to put an employee up there for free. Where are the priorities of the business?
Yeah, yeah. Definitely not in shareholder.
No.
Which is an interesting conundrum, right? Yeah. It's an interesting disconnect between how they need to run the business. Yeah, that's a good point. Any other thoughts on that?
Yeah. I think we'll see fewer and fewer mistake fares honored.
Mm.
And my rule of thumb right now is if a mistake fare hits a blogger site,
it's probably not going to be around
very long. It's not going to be honored.
Yeah.
And that really has been the cadence that we've seen since the change of the DOT rules.
Yeah, yeah. I want to talk real quick about the A350 ultra long, the 900 ultra long range, which is what Singapore is getting eventually, right?
Sometime next year.
And just what, you know, they can operate with that plane the Newark Singapore route, and they can bring back LA Singapore. And, you know, we should actually just talk about not the distance of the flights or the length of the, like the timing of the flights, but actually the departure times and arrival times. So I think that's the one thing, you know, we were talking about. The United flight's kind of brutal in the fact that it leaves late at night, takes 18 hours, and arrives in Singapore 2 days later at like 6 in the morning. And you then are going to go a full day in Singapore.
That's what the old Singapore flights did.
Like that.
Same timing.
Yeah. I mean, they left New York at the one for Newark left at like 11 p.m. or something and got in early in the morning. And it sounds great, but when you realize that if you sleep at the front end of the flight, you're sleeping on U.S. time, basically nighttime. And then you wake up and you're awake when it's nighttime in Singapore. So when you land, you're just completely just
You're going to be zonked no matter what you do, because sleeping on a plane is not as good as sleeping in a bed.
True, true. But it's, I mean, it's rough. And so then we're talking about other late night departures, right, out of the U.S. So like Dulles, Hong Kong, that we have booked, leaves at midnight?
No, like 1:10, 1:15. It's timed like the Boston flight.
So it leaves at 1:50 in the morning. What time does it land in Hong Kong?
5-something in the morning.
That is, I mean, that's ruthless to your body.
It is, but remember, a lot of these are timed against the business traveler schedule, right? So this way they get a full day.
If I was a business traveler, though, I would be completely useless.
I didn't say it made sense.
I mean, if you're going to do that, then have it leave at 3 a.m. from Dulles, or 4 a.m., like something stupid. So you get into Hong Kong 3 hours later. I mean, unless you need to be there for a meeting that morning, but how many people are doing that?
Who knows?
Or is it for onward connections?
I mean, it's probably a mix of both, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's probably a mix of both, because you get into Hong Kong at 5, you can still make the morning bank deep into Asia.
Yeah, yeah. And so we were talking about like the Singapore SFO, Singapore flight, SQ's flight. And theirs leaves San Francisco in the morning, like 9:30, 10 a.m., and gets into Singapore a day later at like 7 or 8 p.m.
And while we like that, who knows if that's what Singapore really wanted. I mean, the advantage they have now is it's offset by about 12 hours from what United does.
Yeah.
Because if they did an evening flight, they really have no advantage.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I mean, I'm thinking about onward connections for them. If I mean, they're relying on O&D traffic, really.
No.
No?
There's a ton of onward flights after 7 p.m., 8 p.m. in Singapore.
True. True. But they're not capturing the early morning business traveler traffic that United's getting.
No.
Yeah.
But I don't know how much traffic United is pushing through Singapore.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, basically, if you read the fare rules just on this, on the trip we're on, SQ was one of the carriers explicitly called out as being excluded.
Because, I mean, we talked about this a little bit because, you know, because of these nonstops that United has and now Singapore has, they got rid of Singapore-Tokyo.
And Narita-Singapore.
Well,
Hong Kong.
Yeah. So those two flights are gone. They used to be the main ways of getting to Singapore. And I actually kind of liked – I only flew the Tokyo route, but I kind of liked it because you got off in Tokyo, walked around for a little while. You know, that was a 10-hour flight, and then you had a 7-hour flight down to Singapore, usually getting in at like 1 in the morning, and then you just go straight to the hotel and go to bed. Maybe I'm just I'm just bitter because my hotel room wasn't ready when we got here. We had to wait till 2:30 in the afternoon for me to get a room.
And then you walked into this.
And I did, yeah. And so at least on the 1 a.m. flight, I could get a room. But, you know, and I got sleep. It's been hard to sleep, I think, for both of us on this trip. Probably you more than me.
It has. Well, I would have slept fine last night if I didn't have my work challenges. Right, that's what threw me off.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's been Asia can be tough. I remember the last time I came to Singapore, I was just a wreck the entire time I was here and in Malaysia.
Yeah. Yeah. It's tough. Unless you have time to adjust, it's hard.
Yeah, it's a big trip. Yeah.
Anything else?
Not really.
That you wanted to chat about? I can't think of anything either. I'm ready to go eat. I'm kinda hungry.
Well, we should go eat.
And you probably want a lime juice, don't you?
I don't know. I do, but I don't know.
Well, from Singapore, this is Dots, Lines, and Destinations. You can find us on Twitter at Dots, Lines, more dots, more lines.com. Thanks for listening. Happy travels. Bye-bye.
Take care.